Have you ever been surprised by a flash of light or been inspired by a shooting star streaking across the sky? If a star you had never seen before peeked over the horizon one evening, would you think it was a big deal? Would you gather some of your smartest friends to try to figure out what it was? What if you and a couple of friends thought it was a big deal? And no one else seemed to care. Would it mean you knew a significant world leader had just been born? Would it inspire you to take a lengthy trip on camelback? Today, on the first Sunday of Epiphany, we remember the Magi, the wise men from the East, who did exactly that. Epiphany is the celebration of the fact that God reveals himself to us. Sometimes in unique ways. Have you ever seen a light that no one else seemed to notice? What did you do? Or did you let others convince you that it wasn't there? I invite you to think a little more about the Magi from the East. We are going to think about what their arrival in Bethlehem tells us about how God connects with us. And we are going to reflect a little more on how that fits with God's grand plan. Let's just take a sneak peek at God's grand plan. We just heard about it in Isaiah chapter 60. Isaiah tells Israel that even though a day will come when all that is bad comes home to roost, and the consequences of global sin will descend like a thick darkness, out of that, a light will shine. Nations will come to that light, and kings to the brightness of that dawn. They will come streaming into God's city like a multitude of refugees on camels, only they will turn out to be children of the people in God's city. And those who are barren will say, "Hey, where did you come from? You are my son. You are my daughter." Okay, that's a grand plan. How is that going to happen? The grand plan, the macroscopic cosmic view, drops down to the microcosmic in the story of the Magi coming from the East. So who were these Magi, and how did they become part of the story of Jesus' birth? The Magi maybe came from Babylon, just below modern-day Baghdad in Iraq, or they were from somewhere just east of that in the Parthian Empire, descendants of the priests of the Medes who elected the king of the Parthian Empire in what is now much of Iran. A sizable number of Jews lived in Babylon, which for a time was on the edge of the Parthian Empire, making it likely that the Magi had access to at least some of the Jewish scriptures. It is quite possible that, like the Ethiopian eunuch who Philip meets shortly after Jesus' death, they are foreigners reading the book of Isaiah and trying to understand what it all means. But it isn't their possible knowledge of the scriptures that propels them on their journey. It was the appearance of a star. One thing is clear about the Magi. They knew the stars very well. If a new star appeared on the eastern horizon, I confess I wouldn't know it. These Magi noticed something most people didn't see. Somehow, this communicated to them that a Jewish king had been born. Yet why did this compel them to leave their homes and travel well over 1,000 kilometers on camelback to find a baby king? It seems likely that the Magi knew something of the Jewish scriptures. If a king of the Jews was born, that was a big deal, because according to the prophets, the next big king was going to rule the world. Injustice would be crushed, and everyone would dwell in safety. A very good and great king was coming. This wouldn't be just a king for the Jews. This would be a king for everyone. So why did knowing about this birth mean they needed to bring gifts all the way to Jerusalem? Traveling to Jerusalem would have been a dangerous journey. They needed to leave their civilization and travel to an area of the neighboring Roman Empire that was not its most civilized. This international trip would take them into difficult terrain in which bandits and wild animals were considerable threats. Couldn't they have just been content with their astrological findings? Perhaps written a journal article about it so they could impress their friends with their predictions when it all came true. But that isn't who the Magi were. They were responsible for what they knew. This was their livelihood. If this was true, didn't someone need to check it out? Didn't others need to know? And if this really was the great king, did they want to be in the category of those who the great king will crush for their injustice and oppression of the poor, for their failure to recognize that a great authority would come to judge the earth? Or did they want to be among those who defended the poor, stood up for the truth, and acknowledged the rule of the one who created righteousness? The hardships of the trip pale in comparison to the magnitude of the message. What else is a Magi to do? The Magi stand for more than a demonstration of the fact that God was calling the nations to worship Jesus. I think they're an example of how God's revelation comes and how we are to respond to it. When God came to Abraham, he had no scriptures to consult, but he knew God spoke to him, and God gave him a vision that sealed the new covenant in a way that made sense to him according to the customs of the time. When God spoke to Balaam, he prophesied a star that would rise out of Jacob. Balaam was not one of the people of Israel. When God spoke to the Magi, it was in a way they understood. God used their knowledge of the stars to communicate something only they could understand. They understood that if God revealed the birth of a king, they needed to go pay their respects. They needed to become subjects of that great kingdom. The Magi become part of the story of Jesus' birth because they pay attention when God speaks to them. They pay attention when something unusual happens in their area of expertise. They accept it as new information. They seek to understand. They see the hand of God at work. They respond. The Bible states that they saw the star of the Jewish king at its rising, but does not indicate that they followed it to Jerusalem. They arrived in Jerusalem because they understood that a Jewish king had been born, and they figured it out. Unfortunately, very few documents from their civilization survived. We know from Roman civilization, however, that travelers could purchase travel guides and maps. These maps indicated places to stay, places to eat, and the distances between them. They showed where to find bridges to cross rivers and passes through the mountains. They even commented on the quality of the food and accommodations. The original Yelp. No Wi-Fi access was required. So the Magi seemed to manage the trip just fine and suddenly drop right into the hotspot of Jerusalem power dynamics. The Bible tells us that when they showed up asking about the Jewish king that had been born, King Herod was frightened and all Jerusalem with him. What the Bible doesn't say is that they were afraid for different reasons. Herod began as a very capable, if somewhat ruthless, leader. He was politically astute, managed famine well, and built impressive buildings. But in his later years, he became paranoid, or more paranoid, and had his favorite wife killed, at least two of his sons, over 300 officials, and a large number of Pharisees, fearing they would take his life so that another could take his throne. The Magi don't seem to know any of this. They take his request to let him know where to find the child so that he can pay homage at face value. They don't know that following God has led them to their most dangerous place yet, one that is shaping up to end their lives and the life of the newborn king. Yet it is right after this very dangerous meeting that they see something unexpected. They see the star again. And this time, incredibly, it is moving in a way that guides them until it stops over the place where the child was. Matthew records that they were overwhelmed with joy. It seems to me they would be relieved to see the star again, but to be overwhelmed with joy seems to involve a little more than seeing what they had seen before. The star actually does something new. It moves in a way stars do not move. It stops when they arrive. These magi know about stars. They know how celestial bodies move. This is super unusual. This is supernatural. This explains their joy. After such a long journey of trust in the message, God confirms it with a greater revelation. Their joy is full. Didn't Jesus do this for the disciples too? After fishing all night and catching nothing, a man appears on the shore and calls out to them, "Cast on the other side of the boat." Ridiculous. But they do it anyway. Suddenly the net is full to the breaking point, and they can't even pull it in. Now the fishermen know it is Jesus. Many stories in the Bible, from Bezalel's craftsmanship to David's slingshot accuracy, are recognized as God at work. Jesus said that those who seek will find, and for those who knock, the door will be opened. The story of the Magi is one of many that shows us that God speaks to us within areas we know well. How often do we pray to understand what God is doing in our occupation that only a few could recognize as a miracle? Paul tells us in Romans that everyone is without excuse because God has made his eternal power and divine nature plain to everyone. Let's be at least as observant as the Magi when it comes to seeing God at work. In my own work, I have seen this to be true. They are not stories I can tell very easily, partly because they involve other people, but largely because, like the story the Magi tell, it doesn't always make sense to others as a miracle. We don't really know how well they knew astronomy or what they saw, and it doesn't make sense to us. It is easy to write their story off as deluded superstition of some kind. Indeed, three of the gospel writers didn't include the story. It's hard to know what to do with it. And as John indicates, he had to cut out many miracle stories because there were just too many to tell when it came to Jesus. Yet it doesn't seem to be the Magi who tell the part of the story that confirms the miracle. Rather, it is the people who are impacted by their journey that preserve the miraculous nature of their arrival. It was when they acted on the revelation they were given that others experienced something they also recognized as the hand of God at work. The part that the Magi tell, presumably to Mary, is the humblest part, the part about the crazy, impossible to believe reason for their journey. And I have to think that would have been an awfully cool meeting for Mary, because she had that same crazy to impossible believe announcement that a virgin will give birth to a child. And, you know, 2 months to 6 months after his birth, these guys show up. And Mary tells the crazy, impossible to believe part about the wise men giving gifts that no doubt provided for their needs during their flight to Egypt. And the appearance of the Magi demonstrates something much larger than how God repeatedly reveals himself to us. The story of the Magi is just the tip of the iceberg, just the little sparks that fly before the firework shoots into the sky. The story of the Magi reminds us that God reveals Jesus in ways we don't expect, to people we don't expect. That part is uncomfortable, but also reassuring. There will be a multitude of Magi. The passage we read from Isaiah indicates that droves of people will come to God like the Magi did. How does that happen? How will all of these people voluntarily come to God's reign from all over the earth? Our Ephesians passage reveals another piece of that mystery. The church is part of the fulfillment of Isaiah's prophecy. We are the beginning of the fulfillment of that prophecy. Sometimes we don't see God's hand at work because we are the work. We are the people from all the nations who are streaming into the kingdom of God. We are those who respond to the king, who stands against the exploitation of the poor and invites everyone to dwell in peace. Jesus said that his followers who would abide in him would do even greater works than he did. We have a calling to be those who not only come into the light, but are the light for others. So as we enter the season of Epiphany, let's ask ourselves, what is the star that God sends to us? How do we see God showing up in areas we know well? Does it make a difference when we intentionally pray for God to help us in our work? And will we look for God leading other people the same way, speaking to them from within different ways of seeing the world and different ways of understanding that God is speaking? Will we be like the religious leaders who can tell Herod where the king is to be born, but aren't at all interested in sending even one to see what the Magi are discovering? The uncomfortable good news may compel us to change how we understand those who hear God in different ways. It might compel us out of our places of safety to follow a leading few can understand. God's good news comes in many unique ways. Let's be Magi. Let's follow the star.